All right, here we go. Incendiary Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Today is March 11, 2018. I will be here for the next 3 hours with you guys. Welcome to the program. Chat rooms, incendiaryradio.chatango.com, incendiarychat.chatango.com, incendiaryquencher.chatango.com. These were all chat rooms started by listeners. 107.9 in Australia with Sean, WTFR, over at tctaunleashed.com. Welcome to all the Australian listeners. Hooley's blog.blogspot.com. You can find the archives there every Monday morning, after the show, commercial free. And so, tonight I got, for the first hour, I got John Friend from the Realist Report. We were talking off the air, and I got to make an announcement for those of you that don't know. Nick Spiro of Circus Maximus lived up in Chicago, a few years younger than I am, has passed on and has met his end, supposedly some cardiac problems with complications with pneumonia. And so he was a relatively young man, 5 years younger than me. And with all the weird, strange things happening out here, human beings, you know, this crazy quote unquote flu season and everything else, it's just a weird time that, somebody, you know, like Nick, passes on. And so I wanted to make that announcement. And so for all the listeners that I did some shows with Nick, I don't know, maybe a year and a half ago, and I haven't been in contact with him, but you know, I figured out it was worth mentioning on the program. So John Friend from the realistreport.com. Welcome to the program, man. I haven't talked to you since Trump, the election, and all that stuff. So we need to do a little catching up.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much for having me back on. I appreciate it. And I just want to echo what you said. I also learned today that Nick Spiro passed away. I follow the Renegade Tribune pretty closely, and also a lot of their radio programs, and I heard about it and read about it today. And yeah, it's very sad, very sort of strange, I guess. I don't know all the details. I didn't know Nick all that well, honestly. I did enjoy a lot of his programs. I didn't always agree with him, but I think he did a lot of really good work. And, you know, it's very tragic seeing somebody, I don't know exactly how old he was, but he certainly seemed much too young to go, you know, so. R.I.P. Nick, you know, he did a lot of good work, and he's a very brave, courageous individual for tackling these topics head on, and I think he was, you know, using his real name and kind of putting his neck out there. So, you know, it's very sad. So R.I.P. Nick, and, you know, you will be missed. You know, you did a lot of really good work. So I just want to kind of echo what you said to get started. And, yeah, man, it is good to be back on. I always enjoy coming on your program. I think you do a great job. You cover a lot of really good topics, and I think we see eye to eye on a lot of things. So it'll be good to catch up today.
Yeah. So a lot of things, John, weird things, you know, coming our way with, I'm sure you saw this. I wanted to get to this with you. We're going to talk Trump in a little bit, but Vladimir Putin's comments basically saying, maybe some of this stuff that all the American corporate media is worried about were actually Jewish characters inside of Russia, et cetera. I'm sure you've seen this one breaking in the last day or two, that basically Russian, quote unquote, Jewish people could have been some of the characters behind some of the meddling in the election. What's your thoughts on Putin busting this one out?
Yeah, I did see this. In fact, I was just reading an article just this morning that was published by the Times of Israel. And let me just, I'll just read you the headline. It was pretty comical, I thought. AJC, so the AJC is the American Jewish Congress. AJC says Putin's comments on Jews like protocols of the elders of Zion.
Yeah,
I love that. And it was interesting, his comments. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if the quote unquote Russian meddling was like these Jewish trolls. You know, it's pretty well known at this point that the State of Israel and all of these different, you know, international Jewish groups, they essentially train online activists, online trolls to go out there and run cover for the Jews and, you know, run cover for the criminal state of Israel, etc. So his comments were very interesting, very, very frank and straightforward. I think what was really kind of interesting about it was, well, it's just once again, a major world figure or somebody that's, you know, has a high profile presence in the media coming out and talking about Jews openly and frankly and critically. And I think that's very good. You know, the Jews certainly do not want anyone speaking critically of Jews or even saying the word Jews, even identifying Jews as Jews. You know what I mean? Yeah. They want to keep that very hush hush. So Putin saying these things was, you know, very good, a very good development in my opinion. I mean, I'm not like one of these people that thinks that Putin is like the savior of the white race or something like that. I think it's probably a bit more nuanced than that. I think some of the things that he's doing and saying are good. He certainly seems like a much more legitimate and serious and professional statesman than the rest of the clowns running the West. He almost kind of reminds me of Donald Trump to a certain extent in that, you know, he wants to put Russia first and he wants to do what's best for the Russian people, which, you know, that's sort of what he says. I don't know exactly what steps he's taking to do that, but he comes across to me as a much more serious and much more legitimate statesman than anybody else. But, one of the things that was interesting was that, his comments made it very clear that Jews were not Russians, right? I mean, he was distinguishing Jews from Russians as if they were a different, or a separate, you know, sort of racial or ethnic group, which they certainly are. And I don't know if that's exactly what he was trying to get at, but that's the way it came across. And again, I think that's very good. Anytime anyone in the limelight is saying not even necessarily something critical about Jews, I don't think Putin was really being all of that critical. He was just making it, you know, a statement, sort of like a prediction, like, oh, you know, maybe it was Jews that were doing this.
Let me say this. And what he's basically injecting here is saying, look, Hasbro worldwide, Hasbro basically saying, look, this cosmopolitan element that is in all of our societies that do, let's just say extracurricular activities outside of probably the government sphere of influence. These characters and we know them well within basically every country. He's like, yeah, these disruptors, these characters, you know, they go across, international boundaries. They disrupt and they do all kinds of things on a worldwide basis. And so some of them might have done it here within our borders, but I'm not going to take the blame for it.
Right. Exactly. Well, and of course the organized Jewish community and a lot of these people over in Israel, like a lot of lawmakers in Israel, were condemning Putin and calling on other governments and other officials to condemn him and were saying it was, well, you know, something straight out of the protocols, for example, but they're also calling it anti-Semitism. And again, it just shows you that anti-Semitism, like the word, is such a weaponized, just distorted term. I mean, it basically means any sort of honest, frank discussion of Jews and, you know, what they're up to and how they operate and what their agenda is. So really, I mean, telling the truth about the Jews is anti-Semitism. And again, their reaction to Putin's comments once again kind of confirmed that, right? So it's very good. And it's interesting, you know, Putin's comments because they come on the heels of Wayne LaPierre, I think is his name, the guy from the NRA, the executive president. He gave that speech at CPAC where he was, you know, denouncing, I think he called him European-style socialists or something like that, which, you know, he's denouncing these European-style socialists, and then he's railing off a list of them, and all of them are Jews. and, of course, you know, this was another speech that the organized Jewish community freaked out about, which, I think is a very positive thing to happen.
Well, hey, remember when Ted Nugent? Hey, listen, remember when Ted Nugent posted that meme of all those Jewish gun grabbers? They freaked over that one too, and he's big in the NRA.
Exactly right. Well, and again, I mean, all these people are doing is making very basic, easily observable statements, and you know, this guy from the NRA in his statements, he wasn't even specifically calling them Jews. He just read, you know, railed off a list of gun grabbers and, you know, most of all of them were Jews. And, you know, it is very clear that the organized Jewish community is behind this assault on the Second Amendment. There's no doubt about that. They make it crystal clear in their own goddamn press releases. Excuse my French. I mean, yeah. These people just openly admit it. And then if you point it out or draw attention to it or highlight it, then you're an anti-Semite. Yeah. Again, proving that just speaking the truth about the Jews is anti-Semitism. But one other thing I want to mention also, so we had Putin's comments, we had this guy from the NRA's comments, and now we have Ann Coulter going out on Twitter calling him globalist. You know, Trump, Gary Cohn just left the Trump administration, and Trump called him a globalist.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, the organized Jewish community is freaking out because globalism is equated with Jews and Judaism. You know, they're promoters of globalists. They're the quintessential globalists, right? And, you know, so they're calling Trump's comments anti-Semitic, and Ann Coulter goes out there and starts, you know, calling out all these other globalists and kind of making a joke about it, really. I retweeted a few of the ones that she put out. I'm going to see if I can find them really quick. But, I mean, again, it just shows you that these people can't have they really try to just shut down any sort of discussion of Jews. Coulter was talking about Sandy Koufax being a globalist. She was calling out all the globalists that were involved and, you know, implicated in the hashtag MeToo scandal. She called Jake Tapper a globalist, a half globalist. So anyways, it's just interesting how, you know, this is all playing out. And it's good. It's sort of, it's just a trend that we've seen really since Trump, you know, began his campaign, you know, of this rising tide of populism. And I think to me, the main thing is once you start going down this path, you know, you start talking about populism, you start talking about putting America first and highlighting the problems, associated with internationalism and globalism. And it's going to inevitably go back to the Jews. If you're being honest, and if you're really trying to get to the bottom of what the hell is really going on in the world, it's going to go back to the Jews because they are ultimately behind it. And they really don't, it's not like some secret conspiracy. They make it crystal clear in their own writings and in their own public policy papers, you know, all these different Jewish groups that are out there, the ADL, for example, the Southern Poverty Law Center, there's a number of Jewish groups. They just openly tell you what they're doing and what their agenda is. And then if you notice it or point it out, you're, again, an anti-Semite, you're a conspiracy theorist, you're a racist. They throw out all these highly weaponized terms to discredit you and to shut you down. And I think, you know, it's becoming less and less effective, right?
Mm-hmm. Now, hey, Ken, get clip two ready. And I wanted to play this for John. And this is from the ADL's own YouTube channel. John, and this is the online hate index, and this is about a minute long, but I wanted the audience to get this, and I wanted you to get this while we're together on the air. Ken, roll clip two.
ADL and the University of California at Berkeley's D-Lab have been working to develop a new approach to tackle online hate using the latest methods. The goal of the online hate index is to help tech platforms better understand the growing amount of hate on social media, and to use that information to address the problem. By combining artificial intelligence and machine learning with social science, the Online Hate Index will ultimately uncover and identify trends and patterns in hate speech across different platforms. We've just completed our first phase of research, and we found that the machine learning model identified hate speech accurately between 78 and 85% of the time. In the next phase of our project, we will look at specific targeted populations in a more detailed manner. We'll examine content on multiple social media sites, and we'll identify strategies to deploy the model more broadly. While there's still a long way to go with artificial intelligence and machine learning-based solutions, we believe the Online Hate Index will help tech companies better understand the extent of hateful content on their platforms by creating community-based definitions of hate speech.
All right, so I can stop it there. So, you know, and the way that they're talking about AI here, John, and this goes down to the spiritual level with the guys, these Jewish guys like Ray Kurzweil. Basically, on top of policing the quote-unquote goyim, those of us out here that are, you know, and then people give me crap, some of these people that troll me in my email for using the word goyim, but I'm using it in the way that they use it. That means basically the rest of us. But basically, they're going to use this AI platforms to police everybody, but also the weirdos like Kurzweil, they're actually trying to merge with it and become immortal through it. And so this is this weird control, you know, this Terminator Matrix level control panopticon coming our way. And a lot of these people are behind the levers of power. And then so we're seeing these YouTube purges and all these other things. And, these are the same characters behind it, but go ahead.
No, yeah, you're exactly right. And this is a topic that I've really been covering pretty extensively the past few months. I mean, it's really free speech and freedom of expression, the First Amendment. Yeah. These are issues that have been, you know, central to everything I've been doing since I got started in all of this. But lately, especially, there's just so many examples. It's like almost every single week, there's a new story about, for example, a teacher down in Florida hosted a podcast. Some reporters for the Huffington Post found out about it, contacted the school, got her fired in a very similar manner that, you know, I've experienced personally, where a malicious reporter goes and contacts, you know, your boss and tells them about your website, tells them about your political views or your political activism. And then you get, you know, it's basically an effort to get you fired, to get you shut down. So we see this so much, this just outright assault on free speech and the First Amendment. And really just anybody who deviates even slightly from, you know, mainstream politically correct talking points or opinions, you're going to be targeted by these people. And they're making no bones about it. You know, they're talking about how they're partnering with all of these big internet companies, Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, you name it. And the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center are like their main advisors, as if the ADL and the Southern Poverty Law Center are, you know, legitimate organizations for assessing what constitutes hate speech. I mean, they kind of come up with what, you know, hate speech is, and then they basically just, you know, again, it's any criticism of Jews. It's any deviation from, you know, mainstream politically correct opinion when it comes to race, when it comes to history. I mean, you know, you can't even question any aspect of history, especially as it relates to World War II, without being called a hater.
You know what it also is? It's even if you call out any of the various shock troops that they have employed in their march towards basically world Bolshevism as well. Any kind of one of their little pet groups, they're off limits to anybody as well. See you guys on the other side of the break. We're with John Friend from TheRealistReport.com. John Friend from TheRealistReport.com, and this just got posted over at the Daily Stormer, and now they've got a big NRA thing, proud supporters of the NRA. And, you know, I'm not just a member of the NRA. I'm a member of Gun Owners of America, Larry Pratt's organization. I'm also a member of Dudley Brown's National Association for Gun Rights. And these are the two way more hardcore organizations. Rand Paul really pushes the NAGR. But back to, I wanted to run this one by John real quick, and this is a short segment. We only got a couple minutes. Paul Nehlen announces Dr. Kevin McDonald as campaign spokesman. Have you seen this, John?
Yes, sir. I love it. Wow. And let me just say real quick, speaking of the NRA, I just joined the NRA today. I paid $140 for a 5-year membership. It comes with a free gift. I'm getting a nice little, you know, NRA bag for your firearms. So I just joined today. I can't say I'm like too knowledgeable about the organization, but just the way they've kind of handled the alleged Parkland shooting, which maybe we don't have time to get into that, but from what I can tell, it looks like yet another hoax similar to Sandy Hook. It looks like a totally fraudulent staged event. Once again, being used to promote gun control and, you know, a number of other tyrannical agendas. But anyways,
with that sheriff Israel down there, the whole nine yards, it's bad.
Sheriff Israel, Jewish, by the way. Most of the kids involved in all of this are Jews as well. I thought that was cool the way that they reacted to it. The town hall that Dana, I think it's Dana, what is it, Dana Loesch, I think is how you pronounce your last name. I thought she handled herself very well, given the circumstances and given the very, you know, biased and hostile environment that she was operating in.
I wish Ted Nugent was there. I wish Ted Nugent would have been there.
So I did want to say I did join today. You know, $140 for a 5-year membership, not a lot of money in my opinion. So I support them. Paul Nehlen, getting Dr. Kevin McDonald on board is a tremendous development. I've actually been in touch with Paul Nehlen recently, and I'm planning on doing a podcast interview with him tomorrow night. Wow. So that should be up on the realistreport.com sometime either tomorrow or at the very latest Tuesday morning. I'm hoping nothing comes up and we don't have to cancel or reschedule or anything like that. But yeah, I'm going to try to interview him tomorrow. And I've been following his campaign pretty closely. I mean, he first ran, from what I understand, back in 2016.
Yeah.
And he was kind of more of a Trump style populist.
Yeah, exactly.
Now he seems like full on, like, pro-white, racial realist, you know, totally hip to the Jewish problem, the Jewish question. So I think it's very good, a very positive development. I think Kevin McDonald is brilliant, a very knowledgeable individual, obviously a very well-spoken individual. He's done a lot of really good work, and I think it's great. I mean, this is exactly the direction American politics needs to be heading in.
Well, you know, he's going right up against the Speaker of the House, Paul Ryan, as well, and we got to put that out there.
Yeah, totally. And he's bringing up a lot of very important issues. In fact, the most important and critical issues that need to be discussed openly. I mean, I think our very future, the future of our nation, the future of our country, the future of our world, certainly the future of our race, depends on us discussing these issues openly and frankly.
Look right across the pond, John, with Valema over in South Africa, the crap he's been spewing against the white people in South Africa. I mean, it's gone full-blown, just open calls, basically, that, hey, white people are targets for extermination worldwide.
Right. And I mean, this is very explicit in South Africa, right, where these leaders are saying, we're going to come and take your property, take your possessions, and basically dispossess you. You know what I mean?
There's a break. We got a long segment coming up after the break. See you on the other side, folks, with John Friend. Keep listening. Support RBN. Alright, we're back. Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. And our guest for this first hour is John Friend from TheRealistReport.com. And we're going to finish up with Paul Nehlen here. Yeah, he started off just as a hardcore, like, hardcore anti-immigration, illegal immigration, you know, really hardcore on Trump's agenda. And then something happened with him. Now, some people think that Paul Nehlen, is some sort of an operator, and he's running some sort of an operation here, and he's insinuating himself into kind of alternative media, pro-white, you know, anti, you know, our Jewish mafia-wise circles, and he's setting something up here. I don't think so. I think the guy just, everybody's on a learning curve, John. We've all, you know, had to deal with our learning curves about how the world is ordered and who pulls the strings and so forth and so on. And I think this guy's a self-made entrepreneur. He's got his own money, and I think he's going for it. Your thoughts?
I completely agree, man. I completely agree. I think seeing his progression, you know, if you, again, you know, I started following him in 2016. That was when I first heard about him. And you've seen his progression. And I think if anybody is being honest, they will have this progression to where, you know, you start out with one subject. Maybe with Paul Nehlen, it was sort of like the America First Trump style populism. In my case, for example, it was 9/11 truth. And if you're being honest, you slowly progress and get to a point where you're kind of bringing it all full circle. And you realize that the broader agenda, that the role of the Jewish community, the role that history has played in weaponized narratives of history, and even current events for that matter. And, you know, you really start connecting the dots. And if you're being honest, again, it all goes back to racial realism, to the role that the Jews have had in undermining our societies and opening our borders and pushing for multiculturalism and state-enforced, quote-unquote, diversity and racial integration, for that matter, and all these other very subversive and anti-American policies that we see institutionalized today.
Yeah.
So, and I mean, I think that's Paul Nehlen in a nutshell. I mean, I think he's really kind of done his homework and come to some conclusions and realized, look, we got to talk about this stuff. Yeah. It's not a popular thing to talk about. You know, people get offended. People don't want to hear it. But hey, the future of our nation, the future of our race, the future of our world depends upon us being adults, talking about this stuff, coming to some sound conclusions, and ultimately doing something about it.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, the big one is when you really dig into the ideological foundations of communism and Talmudism, and then its fruits in Russia, and the Iron Curtain, and then all of the communist disruptors and revolutionaries here in the United States that have basically attempted to overthrow this nation for so long. There's such a large swath of them that come out of this community that if you're really being honest and you see all of these crazy communist movements worldwide and who pulls the strings, you have to come and be like, look, we've got a problem here, and it's not because I hate people. It's because I'm just a logical person that does basic dot connecting here. You know, when you read Behind Communism from the 50s by Frank L. Britton, I mean, you can't come away with it and start looking around your own community and then you see these same elements always involved with the various people. Like here in St. Louis, we've got a bunch of Maoists, John, and then they've tapped into the anger of the black population, Latinos, you know, and then they've even warped the Palestinian populations to become far left wing, not even realizing that the very people that you can't stand bombing Gaza are the same people that pull this far left agenda that you're getting sucked into here in the United States while you're basically in a diaspora away from your homeland. It's so crazy. But your thoughts on that with the whole communist thing? It's just like when you look at the nuts and bolts of communism, you have to realize that basically these are the people trying to overthrow your country.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And that's why it's, I mean, with Kevin, Dr. Kevin McDonald joining Nealon's campaign, I mean, Dr. Kevin McDonald really kind of wrote the book on all of this. I mean, he wrote a whole trilogy on, you know, Jewish evolutionary strategy, the Jewish involvement in radical political movements in America and in the wider Western world. And there's no doubt. I mean, that's what's so amazing is that we have a number of sources, a number of very legitimate scholarly sources proving everything we're saying, documenting all this at great length in a very scholarly fashion, in a very, I would argue, objective fashion. I mean, this is the truth. And, you know, him joining Nealon's campaign and him being really like the expert when it comes to cultural Marxism. I mean, Dr. McDonald has written about communism in Russia and in Eastern Europe as well. But I think really his specialty has kind of been the Western version of Marxism and communism. And that is, again, cultural Marxism.
Yeah.
In Russia and in Eastern Europe, communism was implemented violently. It was a violent political movement. Right? I mean, the Bolshevik Revolution, for example, and all the tyranny and murder and bloodshed we saw in Eastern Europe and in Russia in the early 1900s. In the West, they basically did the slow march through the institutions where they took over our culture. Yeah, they took over our media. Yeah, they took over our media. They took over academia. They took over the sciences, for God's sake, and totally perverted them and twisted them and totally degraded everything that Western educational traditions have been established and founded by. I mean, the concept of rationality and objectivity and, you know, the scientific method, all of this was thrown out the window with these radical Jewish communists that took over our institutions. And again, Kevin McDonald really explains all this in great, great detail and proves it all and explains how they did it. And really what their agenda is, and they made no bones about it. I mean, they were literally attempting to overthrow Western civilization and to, you know, combat quote unquote, what they perceived as quote unquote anti-Semitism. They pathologized white identity to where if you identify as a white person and see yourself as part of a broader community and if you concern yourself with the interests of the broader white community, you're somehow like pathologically evil and irrational. Yeah. You know what I mean? Where Jews themselves are the most ethnocentric and truly racist individuals out there. I mean, I think you can make a very good case that that is an accurate statement I just made. And yet they've totally pathologized any form of white racial identity. So, I mean, it's a big topic, but it's one that needs to be discussed openly and needs to be highlighted in a political campaign. And I think Paul Nealon really at this point is doing God's work, in my opinion. I mean, this is so important. I think what Trump has done is very important, but Paul Nealon is taking this to a whole other level. And I hope we see other people, you know, coming out and doing this sort of thing and taking around. I mean, this is a very risky thing that he's doing. But it's something that ultimately needs to be done. There's actually another guy running for Senate in California out here where I'm at. I can't remember the guy's name off the top of my head, but he's sort of running, you know, a very, I guess, sort of like alt-right, race realist type campaign as well. I don't think he's gotten nearly as much media coverage and nearly as much traction as Paul Nealon has, but we are starting to see people come out and say
Have you seen the old guy, John? His name's Art something, but he's running for Congress somewhere and he's like over the top. I can't remember his name off the top of my head either, but I've listened to him in a few. Farron Schoaf over here on RBN had him on as an interview, and the guy's hilarious. Just an old guy, doesn't pull any punches. You know, Vietnam veteran. Yeah, Arthur Jones. Vietnam vet, whole nine yards, just tells it like it is. And so this is the ripple effect, and I talk about this a lot when Trump first came in. And I told people, I was like, you know what, Trump, there's a psychological ripple effect that happened with Trump to where basically it's almost like he untied the intellectual hands of people to where they're not scared to say what's on their mind as much as they were previously. And so this is the positive kind of psychological ripple effect with Trump is it's like, he unleashed a whole storm of political incorrectness to where now it's like people feel, especially, European extraction, people feel a lot freer to say what's on their mind. And I mean, the workplace is a whole nother Stalinist gulag that we all live in, but at least out here in society, the workplace is going to take a while because it's under these bureaucracies that have implemented so much weird trash. But at least out here, you know, even people like Tucker Carlson and others have been unleashed a little bit, to go, for the jugular a lot more than, and under Obama and all the weirdos during this 8 years, which was almost pushed us to the brink. Don't you think?
Oh no, I completely agree with you. And really, that's kind of been my main thing with Trump is not that he is like this savior figure that's going to fix everything, and he's not even necessarily that he's going to follow through on all of his campaign promises. I hope he does. You know what I mean? Like I do hope that we build a wall. I hope we deport all these illegal aliens. I hope we, you know, put up these tariffs and bring jobs back here, bring our industry back, etc. I mean, Trump says a lot of those things. I mean, it's proving to be a much more difficult thing to actually implement. But that to me is beside the point. The most important thing that he has done is he's opened up space for our ideas. He's pushed the political discourse in our direction, in a more race realist, pro-white direction. And that is good. And we need to seize this opportunity. And I think, you know, we basically have. I think, that's kind of the main success story of the alt-right is that everybody that's sort of in the alt-right, I guess, you know, just, or, you know, the race realist movement, pro-white movement in general, we've used this opportunity and seized it and been effective in injecting these ideas in the political discourse. And I mean, I think we see that reflected a number of different ways. I mean, you mentioned this guy, Arthur Jones, running for Congress in Illinois, Paul Neelan, this other guy in California whose name escapes me. I apologize for that. I can't think of his name off the top of my head. We see that with the NRA, you know, making the speech and denouncing European South socialists. We see Ann Coulter out there condemning globalists. And even before she made those series of controversial tweets during the election, she was outright like calling out the Jews. Like what was the tweet?
How many effing Jews live in this country?
Yeah. No, I mean, see, this is all good, and I don't think Ann Coulter would be making a tweet like that if it were not for Donald Trump running for president at the time, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, they basically, in the minds of so many warped individuals worldwide, I mean, look at these self-suiciding Europeans. They've almost criminalized just having white DNA, like somehow you're a walking, breathing, biological criminal because you're of European extraction. I mean, that's how bad that they've pushed this thing towards this total insanity to where at least Trump coming back in, it's just like, you know, people at least got a, you know, they walked a little higher in their step, stuck their chest out a little bit more, whatever. It doesn't matter. It's just like they pushed it to the brink and then this happened, which, you know, you got to say, hey, this is at least a positive move. I mean, just think of what, Hillary Clinton would have came into office and what we'd be experiencing right now. What do you think we'd be experiencing?
Oh, I mean, it would have been the same crap we got from Obama, the same open borders, globalist agenda. There's no doubt about that. And I'm not even saying Trump is totally turning us away from that sort of globalist agenda. I mean, the rhetoric that he espouses certainly stands in stark contrast from that sort of, you know, globalist rhetoric you hear from Obama and somebody like Clinton. But no, I mean, I think it's definitely a very positive development that we got Trump in the White House for sure. And I mean, we've seen how just the way he's called out the media, I think has been very positive. The way the media has been exposed for being just the total dishonest scumbags that they really are. Think about like this Parkland shooting. I mean, this is another episode of the media being so just blatantly dishonest. And, you know, these kids being presented out there and put up, and they have all these talking points, and it's all so phony. And it's so
hot. I got a video that I'm going to
play. Normal people see this.
Yeah, I got a video I'm going to play later on after I let you go. It's called CNN's Child Army. And it gets into this David Hogg and this little Emma Gonzalez and all of these characters, that are so ready to just jump in front of cameras. But then they try to, you know, and they go through all this basically that you're not allowed to question, these, you know, 15, 16, 17 year old kids. And it's like they've somehow have been coronated or, baptized to be the leaders, and you can't even question these kids or somehow you're hateful towards children, and blah, 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 blah. And the whole thing is sick. It's insane.
Well, and what's insane is that I totally agree with you. And what's so infuriating about it is that we have all these kids coming out the woodwork, you know, coming out. They're all over the media. They're all over CNN. They're all over Twitter. I just read an article. I think it was actually maybe a week ago or so in The Hill. And it was talking about how all of these shooting survivors, you know, from the school, these alleged shooting survivors, they're leveraging their social media presence to push for gun control.
Yeah.
And we see, like, David Hogg, for example, on Twitter, he's got, like, hundreds of thousands of followers, just like some of these other, you know, like, high-profile anti-gun spokespeople that, you know, allegedly survived the school shooting. It's so phony. I mean, it's not even, like, it's not even like debatable. It's just so obviously so phony and so scripted. It's like they're not even trying to attempt to even be clever with it. It's just bam, in your face, blatant. And it's just like, I mean, it's very similar to Sandy Hook. I mean, I thought the same thing when Sandy Hook happened. I mean, I was watching the coverage of CNN and, you know, other mainstream outlets when Sandy Hook first happened, and I'm just looking at it like, wow, this just does not even seem legitimate at all. And I mean, of course, that's sort of like a, you know, I don't know, it's not like an objective thing, it's just like that's my impression. But I think that's how a lot of people felt, and that's certainly how a lot of people feel now with this shooting down in Florida. It's so damn funny.
They've ran so many false flags between Sandy Hook and now. It's, I mean, for you to still buy it, you got to be silly. We'll see you on the other side.
Was it used to?
Cindy Radio on RBN. Now, I wanted to, we got a few minutes here. John's going to stay till 20 after the top of the hour. I asked him to stay on because I got a couple other things to go through with him. Ken, if you would get clip 18 ready. Now, this is the Rebel Media, John. I wanted to get this one out, and I want to get into this other article. But this is the Rebel, Ezra Levant up there in Canada, Jewish guy, you know, plays kind of conservative up there. Now there, this has to do with the Parkland shooting, okay? So you got Sheriff Scott Israel down there, but all of these kind of kosher conservatives are trying to throw this, Muslim deputy under the bus as like some sort of a mastermind down here where you got this Jewish sheriff. And I want to play this and I'm going to get your opinion here. Ken, roll clip 18.
As I continue to dig into the problems with Broward County Sheriff Scott Israel, one central figure keeps popping up, the deputy in the Broward County Sheriff's Office by the name of Nizar Hamzeh. Now, Hamzeh is critically important to understanding not just Sheriff Scott Israel's incompetence, but his malfeasance and his coddling of some very, very bad people. Hamzeh is the regional Florida director of CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, a group considered a terror associate organization many places in the world. Now, I've told you previously on the show, and we've put up some photos, I've also put them up on my social media, about Israel and Hamzeh's associations with major players in Hamas, and their close, close relationship with the imam of the Darul Uloom Mosque over in Pembroke Pines, that's on the west side of Broward County, Florida. Now, that imam was a spiritual advisor to dirty bomber Jose Padilla. The new information we've found is even more troubling. The CARE, where Hamzeh is a major player, has certain mosques that it puts under their umbrella. CARE often writes letters. For example, they wrote a letter to the Florida Department of Law Enforcement asking them to roll back hardline training on radical Islamic terror because they didn't like that the instructor was telling the truth. And when they write these letters, there's a list of associate mosques. And one of those mosques is the Masjid al-Hijra in Miramar, Florida. Miramar is a little town in the southwest corner of Broward County. It's within the confines of the patrol area of the Broward County Sheriff's Office. But why is this little Masjid al-Hijra mosque significant? Well, A, they're an associate of CARE, where Hamze, the deputy, is a major player, where he's an executive-level regional director. But more importantly, this little masjid, this little mosque in Miramar, sits on a plot of land that directly adjoins the family home of Adnan al-Shukri Juma. Now, if you don't know who al-Shukri Juma is, I'm going to tell you. He was killed in 2014 in Pakistan after he rose up the ranks of al-Qaeda, became a senior commander, counter-terror forces, took him out in Pakistan back in 14. Now, how did he rise up the ranks of al-Qaeda? He was one of the masterminds, one of the planners behind the 9/11 attacks. You heard me right. Let me put it into place for you. Let me put some of these puzzle pieces, connect them for you. The boyhood home.
Okay, there's the music, and I think you're going to get the idea here. But then we're gonna hash this out with John on the other side, because this is what they always do. We'll see you guys on the other side. Second hour of Incendiary Radio on RBN. Now, I wanted to play that for the audience and John as an example clip of how the certain element of kind of alternative media, what you call truthers, what you call just anybody that's outside of the corporate media that exists on YouTube, the blogosphere, and so forth and so on. How you'll, and Alex Jones's operation did this, after Parkland, where they zeroed in on this Islamic deputy. Okay. So you got a Jewish sheriff. Oh, okay. And this guy, and I covered this in the last couple of weeks, this is the same place of this Fort Lauderdale airport shooting that a lot of us were questioning. Okay. And so now you've got, basically, this Islamic CARE, Council of American Islamic Relations guy, that basically a whole swath of these people are trying to throw under the bus as like the nefarious character. And so, of course, they tied these mosques together. Stephen Emerson, Frank Gaffney of the Center for Security Policy, all these that are tied in with Pamela Geller and some of these folks, where basically they use these Islamic mosques as an umbrella, okay, for the simpletons to always look at and say, oh my gosh, all these jihadis running around. And yeah, there's a lot of jihadis running around, but at the same time, the alphabets, the Mossad and so forth, they use these places as like, buffers to run their operations. And so these are the people that you can easily throw under the bus as your throwaway, your patsy, while you're running these operations. And so, yeah, there's a large Islamic contingent down here in Florida. But at the same time, you've got this Scott Israel character. You've got a lot of things going on where, just like the psychological and the psychotropic medication angle they use as like a little shield to run their operations, you also have the Islamic angle. The care always gets thrown under the bus, and care is probably totally controlled by American and Israeli and British intelligence. But they use these guys as cannon fodder, to throw people off the trail, the bloodhounds off the trail, if you know what I'm saying, John. And so I wanted to throw that out there because people get sucked into this, but it's just like when you look at the totality of these operations, there's not some ragtag bunch of Muslims that can carry off an operation like Parkland or Sandy Hook. You got to have government actors. You've got to have state actors with high levels of training, high levels of funding, and the ability to use the media to cover their tracks. Go ahead. I just wanted to throw that all out there.
No, I'm glad that you brought this up, because I have a friend who's kind of, he's definitely a Trump supporter, but he's kind of like an Alex Jones tier Trump supporter, where he's like, he kind of knows my views about like race and the Jews and stuff, but he doesn't really maybe know all the details or want to hear me out on everything, but he's at least like a Trump supporter. And these are the type of guys that this disinfo is targeted towards. Yeah. And this was nothing but disinfo, what we heard, you know, somehow tying in this Jewish sheriff to the Muslim Brotherhood and, you know, radical Islamic terrorists and Hamas and even the 9/11 people. I mean, this is such major BS. And I remember shortly after Parkland, he brought this to my attention. He was like, oh, well, yeah, I heard Sheriff Israel is like tied in with, you know, like the Muslim Brotherhood. And I was like, what? Because I hadn't heard that before. Yeah, yeah. And he was like, yeah, that's the news that I'm getting, blah, blah, blah. And my first thought was like, wow, this is probably some ridiculous crap put out by, my first guess was Pamela Geller, which is probably an accurate guess. And they're always trying to do this. It's very high level. I wouldn't even say high level, but it is definitely disinformation. And it just perpetuates this Jewish concocted narrative of a global war on terrorism and this alleged threat that radical Muslim extremists pose to the West, all of which is basically disinfo. It's pretty much BS in my opinion. I mean, I think Muslims, the only threat that Muslims and you know, Islam in general poses to the West is if we allow them to come over here to our countries and replace us. And that is basically what's going on with this migrant invasion, is certainly in Europe, but even in America too. Now we have, you know, thousands of Muslims coming over here now from the Middle East as refugees, et cetera. And
Look, let me run this by you since you brought it up. It's like, dude, and I try to get this through to my listeners. I'm like, bro, if you allow these people to come into your country and they have a completely different marriage construct than you do of monogamy, where they're allowed to have four wives, Osama bin Laden had 50 something brothers and sisters, half brothers, quarter brothers, whatever you want to call it. I mean, but if you adopt a whole nother, a foreign, social construct to come into your country in large numbers where these guys are allowed to have four wives, you don't think that they're going to outbreed you in like a generation and a half? I mean, people just don't understand the simplicity of just the marriage construct itself, of monogamy, Christian kind of, you know, version of society. And then boom, you got the Islamic one where I can have four wives. What am I going to have? 16 kids versus two or three? I mean, how long do you think before these two, worlds collide?
Well, right. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, these people, the culture that they bring with them, the sort of mindset, the attitude, it's so alien to us in the West. I mean, it really is. And I mean, I don't, to me, they can live however they want to live in their own countries. Like, I don't want to even attempt to criticize their way of life or their culture, their traditions or whatever. I mean, I respect it. That's, if that's what they do, that's what they do. I don't want it over here. I don't want it being shoved down my throat. And I certainly don't want them, you know, basically being like the state is facilitating their resettlement here, which I'm totally against. I mean, that's the main point.
Well, John, listen to this. My where my parents live, okay, there's a bar that my dad and them hang out at, and they're all old guys. They're, you know, but next door is a place owned by some, I think they're some sort of Somalis or something. It's basically, you know, one of these grocery stores that's basically all international foods. And placard right at the front is, we accept SNAP/EBT. So basically, the whole thing is a racket. You gotta watch while you pay taxes, okay? And then there's a bunch of people that get flown over here. Then they get this card that the taxpayer, foots the bill. And everything in there basically, so the person that owns the store gets rich off government funds, electronic benefits transfer, that these other freeloaders that just came into your society, they get so much a month, they get to go buy from their own friends' store. So the friends that owns the store gets rich, they get their free food, and guess what? All of us are paying for it.
Oh, I know, man. It's so insane. It's like, you couldn't, I don't know, man. It's like you couldn't even make this up. It's so outrageous what is going on. And then again, like, you say something about it, you're critical of it, and you're demonized as like this crazy conspiracy theorist, you know, racist or whatever. It's ridiculous.
You're a sick xenophobe, and just by you being a white male, you're a criminal just because of your DNA profile. You see? Mm-hmm.
Well, I think at this point that sort of narrative is untenable. It's being exposed on a daily basis. And we see people standing up to it on a daily basis. And of course, facing the repercussions, unfortunately, at this point, you know, where people are losing their jobs or getting, you know, thrown out of college, for example. Or, you know, there's a number of other things that have come up and happened to people that have expressed these views publicly. And it's really an outrage. I mean, it's totally tyrannical. That's the thing that's being exposed, is just how truly of a tyrannical society we live in. I mean, we like to think that it's, you know, America, the home of the free, the land of the brave, you know, you can say whatever you want, the land of opportunity, et cetera. But really, that is at this point being exposed for being totally false.
Well, you know what? I was last week. I was like, what's Antifa whining about, John? I read the Communist Manifesto, the 10 planks, on the air last week. I was like, why is Antifa even running around whining? They're already almost all in place. What left do they have to implement? I mean, what, to get our guns just to kill us all and throw us in the gulag? That's the only thing left. The graduated income tax is here. Public education is here. You know, the entire thing, with all the planks of the Communist Manifesto are basically almost all in place. So Antifa's running around wanting to beat people up, smash people's, business windows and all the rest of it. And it's like, why are you whining? Your side's almost got the whole thing won.
Right. No, you're right. It's because of the way the narrative is controlled and the way our discourse is controlled, to where, like, as you say, like, accurately, like, the Communist Manifesto, the 10 planks have essentially been implemented by the federal government of the United States. And yet these Antifa people and many others like them, maybe they're not outright Antifa, but, you know, other left-wing people, and people who have had their mind poisoned by left-wing rhetoric, you know, they still go on about, you know, white privilege and systematic racism and all this other nonsense. And really, all of those ideas, all of those talking points, all of those narratives, they really don't stand up to scrutiny if you actually stop and think about it. Like, the concept of white privilege, for example, I mean, it's so insane that people actually could go along with this, and it's simply because they've never been presented an alternative. You know, they're just presented one side. They're never presented our side, our critiques of, you know, this concept of white privilege, which is totally asinine. It's totally backwards, you know, where it's white people who are being systematically discriminated against, and it's minorities who have, who truly do have privilege, you know, but it enforced and sanctioned by the state. You know what I mean? I mean, we could easily make that case and prove it demonstrably. I mean, simply by citing affirmative action, for example, or the way, you know, these illegal aliens are treated, you know, where they're not deported. They're given privileges, they're given benefits, they're giving social services, etc. It's absolutely insane. But again, I mean, if you control the discourse, if you control the narrative, our ideas are not allowed to be entertained and to be discussed or presented for that matter.
All right. So let's get this out. We got a couple minutes left. It's 13 after. The break will probably hit us in 5 minutes. This is Jonas Alexis. Now, this is a black guy. He writes for Veterans Today, but the guy, he's one of the people that you can always count for some cutting-edge insight. Benjamin Netanyahu hacks California. Thanks to Kamala Harris. Now, she's a black female senator, and she's on the radar to be a 2020, let's just say, person to come up against Trump. You simply cannot make this stuff up. If the people who are pushing the Russiagate ideology is right, then Netanyahu has hacked California. My dear friend and colleague Mark Dankoff has recently sent me a Twitter post by Netanyahu, which read, "Today I met with Senator Kamala Harris of California. We discussed the potential for deepening cooperation in water management, agriculture, cybersecurity, and more. I expressed my deep appreciation for America's commitment to Israel's security. Let's do some thought experiment here. Let's suppose that Vladimir Putin or Sergei Lavrov or any Russian official had tweeted something like that. Wouldn't it be all over the Washington Post, CNN, the New York Times, National Review, the Weekly Standard, Commentary, and other Zionist neoconservative outlets? Wouldn't they hastily put a headline saying that Russia is attempting to hack the United States? So who gave Netanyahu the right to do that, which is obviously illegal? Last July, Kamala Harris tweeted that Americans should know what happened with Russia. The junior United States senator continued to say, I'm not going to stop asking the questions. I just want to get to the truth of what happened. We should know what happened. There should be appropriate consequence and accountability for what happened. Ms. Harris, don't Americans deserve to know why you are selling the United States to a foreign potentate? Should we stop asking questions about your meeting with Benjamin Netanyahu, the man who doesn't want to stop drinking the blood of Palestinian men, women, and children? What should we do as Americans if a U.S. official allows a foreign potentate to subvert the country or a state? Shouldn't you be held accountable as well? So this gets into this whole thing where the Prime Minister of Israel can come hang out with a senator from California talking about water rights, cybersecurity, and all the rest of it. And this is totally kosher, John, but yet this nebulous, oh my gosh, the Russian, blah, blah, blah. This gets this constant barrage of coverage on all of our mainstream Zio outlets. It shows the utter dual standard, hypocrisy, and all the rest of it. So Netanyahu can hang out with a senator from the United States and talk about all these, you know, agreements between one state of the United States and his country, and that's not meddling.
I know, that's the thing. Like, this whole Russian meddling in the election thing has always been total BS from the very beginning. And really, you're right. I mean, the main issue we have when it comes to foreigners meddling in our elections is the Israelis and the organized Jewish community, who basically have a total stranglehold on our electoral process. I mean, look at AIPAC, for example. In fact, AIPAC just had their conference. I think it was just, I think it was last weekend or maybe this week. It was recently.
It was recently.
And I mean, we just have one U.S. politician after another from all levels of government just up there, you know, basically pledging undying loyalty to the state of Israel, a foreign country. I mean, the hypocrisy is so incredible. And, you know, this is yet another example of it. And, you know, the state of California itself, that's how bad it is in America, where it's not only the federal government that's basically doing the bidding of the Israelis. It's even our state governments that are in bed with these people and coming to agreements with them and giving them benefits and privileges, et cetera. It's so insane.
Well, you know, another thing is everybody, all these Democrats come out whining about Russian tampering in our elections. It's like all the tampering that our deep state has done in elections around the world, and then you people want to whine about, one little sliver of something that's not even really provable, and all the people our deep state has assassinated, revolution sparked, all the mass murder all around the planet. And look at just Gaddafi. Look at Saddam Hussein. Look at the poor people of Syria. And then,
yeah, I mean, we're literally like overthrowing sovereign nation states left and right, murdering hundreds of thousands of people in the process. And yet we want to go on and on and on about Russia allegedly meddling in our elections. It's absurd. It's insulting. I mean, that's the thing. It's so insulting. All of this stuff is so insulting to anybody who is using their own brain to think about this stuff. I mean, really, that's what it boils down to.
So go ahead and plug your website and everything else, John. We're coming up on the break. So.
Yeah, no, thanks, man. It's been fun. I enjoy this as always, and hopefully we can start doing this a little bit more regularly.
Right.
The website is therealistreport.com, and I also write for American Free Press, America's last real newspaper. Check them out at americanfreepress.net.
All right, John, thanks, man, for coming on, and appreciate you coming on, and we'll see you guys on the other side of the break.
Thanks, man. Have a good one.
We're back to the radio on the Republic Broadcasting Networks. A restaurant is charging white customers more than it charges black customers. And this is down there in New Orleans. I mean, and this is run by some Nigerian guy. Okay. And it's on the Indy 100. We're basically for social justice activism, and it wasn't anything, it was voluntary. So the guy says, if you're white, you got to pay like $15 more for your meal than black people do because of the wealth disparity between white people and black people in the city of New Orleans. And so, you know, this is the mentally ill kind of world that we're living in right now with this brainwashing, this social justice brainwashing. You know, up on the Gateway Pundit, this was a weird one. Extraordinary number of ex-CIA operators running for Congress as Democrats all over the country. Very weird, you know, a bunch of characters are coming out of the Central Intelligence Agency and running as Democrats. And, you know, you could look at this in a whole lot of different ways. You could look at it as it's a bunch of these basically embedded deep state swamp creatures that they think Trump is like some dangerous person to the superstructure of the Leviathan state. You know, or you could look at it as like this. A bunch of people are coming out of and running as Democrats to take the Democratic Party in another direction. So, you know, this one's hard to gauge right here at this point in time, but that one should rub everybody kind of weird that somehow, okay, a bunch of people are coming out of the CIA and they're all going to run as Democrats for various congressional seats throughout the country. You know, I got a bunch of clips here. Let's get clip 15 ready. Now, of course, you know, Jeff Sessions this week, we're really ripped into the sanctuary cities people and, especially the mayor of Oakland, as we all know, she gave some heads up allegedly to a bunch of illegals, that ICE was coming to snatch up a bunch of them. And so there's this thing going on. I got about a minute left. Let's roll clip 17. Oh, yeah, 15. You're right. You're right.
My fellow Americans, protecting the safety and well-being of American citizens is my highest duty as president. Yet lawless sanctuary jurisdictions are nullifying federal law, obstructing immigration enforcement, and releasing thousands of criminal aliens into U.S. communities to prey on innocent victims. It's absolutely terrible. For example, in recent days, San Francisco officials denied ICE's request to turn over a criminal alien with a prior conviction for battery and a charge for driving under the influence. In another city in California, local law enforcement recently denied ICE's request to turn over a criminal alien convicted of sexual battery who had a history of domestic violence. A truly
violent... Go ahead and pause it, Ken, and we'll finish this on the other side.
A forgotten world, forgotten lives, no one ever hears them cry. No.
On the Republic Broadcasting Network. Welcome back. So, Ken, let's resume Trump on the sanctuary cities thing, and then we'll move on. Go ahead.
Person. And last week, the mayor of Oakland warned criminal aliens of a coming ICE enforcement action, giving them time to scatter and hide from authorities. The mayor's conduct directly threatened the safety of federal immigration officers and the law-abiding Americans in her community. The state of California is sheltering dangerous criminals in a brazen and lawless attack on our constitutional system of government. Every state in our union is subject to the laws and constitution of the United States, including California. Yet California's leaders are in open defiance of federal law. They don't care about crime. They don't care about death and killings. They don't care about robberies. They don't care about the kind of things that you and I care about. In other recent cases, New York authorities released illegal aliens who were previously charged with assault, criminal possession of a weapon, possession of poisonous drugs, and strangling a person. In each case, New York officials had refused to turn these dangerous illegal aliens over to ICE or notify ICE about their release with enough time for them to be safely arrested. Just this week, the city of Denver refused ICE's request to turn over a criminal illegal alien charged with vehicular homicide for killing another driver in a horrific hit and run. Sanctuary jurisdictions are the best friend of smugglers, gang members, drug dealers, human traffickers, killers, and other violent offenders. We want our cities to be sanctuaries for Americans, not safe havens for criminals. That is why I'm calling on Congress to block funds for jurisdictions that shield dangerous criminals. It is time to end the bloodshed brought about by reckless sanctuary policies, and it's time to save American lives and American cities. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
You're going to stop it, Ken. look, we've got a bunch of sick, sick individuals in places of power throughout our nation. And unfortunately, it is on predominantly the left side of the political spectrum. Jesuit Jerry Brown, oh, good old de Blasio up there in New York, the Tards running Denver. You know, look, there's a couple forces here, and I talk about this a lot. I didn't want to get into it with John because I didn't want to get off track. Of course, the American Jewish Committee, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, all the Jewish organizations, they're all big pro-immigrant types. But you got the wings of some of the libtard Protestant denominations, and then you've got the Roman Catholic denomination. Now, I'm a big listener of some of the characters over there on the research side of the house that throws the Vatican under the bus constantly. Eric John Phelps, Greg Szymanski, Alan Lamont, Johnny Cerucci, all these people. And there's enough evidence from these researchers to basically put the American Conference of Bishops up for trial for treason, just like basically the Kosher Nostra elements that I just mentioned previously. So all these Catholic bishops, especially in all the big libtard major cities, they are as big of traitors as any of the Heeb mob, okay, the Jewish mobsters. And I don't use Heeb as some sort of slight. There's a Heeb magazine run by Jews for Jews. So when I say the Heeb mob, I'm not saying anything that's outrageous. Heeb, short for Hebrew. So look, and then look, and then there's a whole swath of these black libtard, congressional black congress type. They're just as big into the inviting in of every kind of refugee and alien into our country as anybody else. They think it's going to work good for basically the communist cause. And I mentioned earlier about how basically there's been this, the proxy armies of communism, they get insulated from running their operations. Look at Antifa. You know, Sargon of Akkad, this guy, big YouTuber, he was in speaking, I think it was at a King's College in London, one of those. A bunch of Antifa scumbags ran in and disrupted his event with another guy. It's like these people basically believe that they're insulated and unaccountable for criminality. And I always talk about the left cover for terrorism. Bill Ayers types, the weathermen. He's running around as a tenured university professor. If he was a right winger, you think Bill Ayers would be out of jail right now? Give me a break. If he was some sort of patriot militia movement guy that was blowing up buildings because of the encroachment of the American people's rights. No, he was a left-wing communist terrorist. And so these people get treated with kid gloves. People have learned this. If you want to be a criminal, you might as well join the Democratic Party. Because the likelihood of you being held accountable, on that side of the aisle, I mean, it's a lot less likely. You're going to get a little slap on the wrist. That's why all these people gangsters get involved with Democratic politics. You know, and I deal with a lot of these guys in the labor movement, pipe fitters and a bunch of these other, there's a bunch of organized crime elements in there, but then there's good people as well. And look, the labor movement, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I read stuff out of the Naked Communists where that basically the head of the AFL-CIO back in the 40s was saying, look, our struggle's against communism. We can't have it. An American labor movement cannot be communist because then you're not going to be making a decent living wage. Everybody's going to be basically gulag level. Look at the people in China now. How do you expect to compete against these people in China to sell products? You can't do it. Anyway, I didn't get to this last week, and I want to get to it. Ken, get clip 8 ready. Now, this old Army retired guy, Howling Sarge, on YouTube, and I play his stuff from time to time. But think about the gun industry, and I brought this up when Parkland happened, how basically when people are scared of getting their guns grabbed by the communist Democrats, then guess what? The gun sales spike. And I floated this one out here saying, look, you know, these big gun manufacturers are multi-million dollar industries. When they get a friendly in like Trump and everybody thinks the Second Amendment's safe, gun sales plummet. When you got a nut like Obama in, gun sales are at the top of the, you know, up there way at the top. Everybody said Obama was the best gun salesman in America. So, following on this kind of vein of thought, let's roll clip 8.
You know, I've just been kind of pondering something. You know, when Obama was in office, the big scare was that Obama was going to come take your guns, that the Democrats were going to pass a bill to ban the AR-15s, the 30-round magazines. Anyway, then Hillary comes along. And the big scare was that if Hillary wins the election, that she's going to take everything. So it seems the Democrats are tied into every gun scare that there is. And what I'm getting to is now we have a president who is pro-Second Amendment and has close ties to the NRA. But all of a sudden, Democrats are hollering gun control again. And I'm wondering, is it possible, do you honestly believe that there are any Southern Democrats who hold office who aren't getting money from gun manufacturers? I mean, think about it. It wouldn't be hard to do through a PAC or through a third party. And the reason I say that is because Republicans never call for gun control. It's always the Democrats calling for gun control. So when Republicans have the reins, gun prices stay pretty stagnant. They don't go up. They don't go down. They just kind of stay where they are. But then the Democrats are the ones who start hollering gun control. Now they're trying to pass a bill to ban all semi-automatic weapons, which would include your SIGs, your Glock, Smith & Wesson, Ruger, all the semi-auto pistols, Kimbers, Desert Eagles. So a ban on all semi-automatic weapons would mean pistols also. But it just seems to me that everyone gives the Republicans 9 kinds of hell because they're sponsored by the NRA. But who is it that's pushing the Democrats to holler gun control? Who is it that's funding Democrats who has a vested interest in the rising of gun prices, ammunition prices. Who? Your gun manufacturers. So we need to research a little bit, and we need to find out if any of these gun manufacturers are actually supporting Democratic candidates through backdoor channels.
All right, you can stop it there. Now, I'm not making any accusations, but what I'm saying is it's an angle. You have to flip these incidents on their head. And I've seen these kind of, like with Parkland here. And I even floated it out there that, you know, you just don't know. Gun sales themselves, prices aren't as big of a deal, but volume are, ARs. When people get scared that they're going to take ARs off the market, then everybody goes and buys ARs, AKs. And so I don't know. I just, when other people are thinking the same way I was, okay, when you see these incidents, okay, look at the spike in gun sales after Sandy Hook. But look at Florida and elsewhere, the rise in and how many ARs were being bought. I don't know. You know, this is a tough one. Some people believe that this government of ours is never going to try to get the guns out of the hands of the citizens. Others believe that it's going to go Bolshevik style, Gulag Central one of these days. You know, you got Operation Garden Plot, Cable Splicer, Rex 84. You got all the outlet malls, which I covered ad nauseum in the last year and a half, 2 years, where they all look very eerie and they could be turned into DHS type of holding facilities in a very, very short period of time. Look at the structure of any outlet mall. And I've said this numerous times, Atlanta outlet mall, Denver outlet mall, St. Louis outlet malls. And then look at the structure and the way they look with towers and everything else. Very creepy. A bunch of hidden in plain sight, convertible facilities. And we all went through the whole Walmart, closing, thing that it was huge in all the alternative media, about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And so interesting stuff. Let's see here. I got a bunch of things to get through. Let's go to clip 22, Ken. Oakland police, hasta muerte, to death, this coffee shop that won't sell to cops. Let's roll clip 22.
New at 5, a cafe in Oakland is getting a lot of attention tonight for refusing to serve police officers. We're talking about Hasta Muerte Coffee on Fruitvale Avenue, and KPIX 5's Mary Lee finds out why they're turning away cops.
I'm part white, Native American, and black. Any white person that's got a problem with these people being here, they can go back to Europe.
Vincent Gordon made a special trip to Hasta Muerte Coffee in Oakland to buy a cup of coffee and this shirt. He fully supports the cafe and its stance to refuse service to police officers.
I think it's good to have a safe zone for people of color. I don't personally feel safe around police officers. Sometimes I go into other coffee shops where there's a bunch of them in there with their big guns, you know, like showing out. I don't want to sit and drink coffee next to somebody with a big old gun on them.
Hasta Muerte Coffee posted this picture to their Instagram page, writing, "On February 16th, an Oakland police officer entered the shop and was told, quote, we have a policy of asking police to leave for the physical and emotional safety of our customers and ourselves."
That officer that has happened, I know him. I work with him in a mini project. He's a good friend of mine.
Jose Ortiz owns La Perla Puerto Rican Cuisine in Oakland. He believes owners should not use their businesses to promote their platforms.
That is a slap in the face, because at one point, they're going to need a police officer. Because when somebody go over there and put a gun in the head of them and rob them, they're going to be have to call 911.
Just outside this cafe is this mural here. It says they dedicate the mural to all the black and brown men and women who have left us due to police violence, racism, and gentrification. Reporting in Oakland, I'm Mary Lee, KPIX 5.
You can stop it there. We will talk to you guys on the other side of the break.
I hit my fair share of hard times in my
We are back. Hasta muerte, to the death, or to death, drink to death. You know, you got stabbed to death. Hasta muerte, the name of this coffee shop. And they don't want cops in there. And look, you know, you have that right as a business owner, et cetera, et cetera. And these are the same people. They're whining about gentrification. They're whining about violence to black and brown people by the hands of the cops and so forth. They don't want to clean up their own backyard. They don't want to call their own to account for behavior out on the streets, which makes cops act the way they do. Cops, you know, it's a synergistic relationship, and I've went through this ad nauseum, but basically, if everybody in your neighborhood goes to church and sings in the choir and dresses nice and they're respectful of each other, the cops are going to be the nicest guys in your neighborhood. They're not going to go around beating people up and, you know, whatever, shooting people, if you got a nice neighborhood. It doesn't really happen. There is exceptions to the rules, et cetera, et cetera, but, this is biblical, how the sword of government acts. It's reciprocal to how good or bad the people are in any certain, area. And that's pretty much just a natural law rule. Now, yeah, you can get a bad cop that out in the middle of $1 million homes that goes way past the scope of his duties, and you're going to get anomalies like that. But, people want to live, you know, in a place like Oakland, okay, where there's knuckleheads, you know, running around, just like in Frisco, where there's feces everywhere, needles all over the place, homeless encampments, hookers, you know, drug addicts everywhere. And yet you expect the cops to be the Mr. Nice Guy that comes into, you know, and they get treated like crap all day, gotta, you know, get people that resist them at every step of the way, things thrown on them and everything else in these urban areas. And then you expect them to be the most respective of, the rights of individual A, B, C, and D. I mean, people live in these pipe dreams. Some of the libertarians live in this pipe dream world where, the cop can never do anything right. He's always evil. The state's always evil. Everything's organized crime and blah, blah, blah. These people, you know, you live well within the domicile of your own house, but to try to keep a lid on society, right now with basically the mind control systems in place. I mean, a cop is, these guys are dealing with things. You've got the feds doing things to all of us as people, and then these guys are trying to keep a lid on society. I mean, it's like they're getting it both ends. You guys have to realize that. See you guys on the other side.
With communists trying to get into our heads, take over the media with Marx, they force feed ya. Come on, all you white spiked rabbits, that is red. Come on, all you white spiked rabbits, that is red. Encourage such mixing to us, it is sick. They say for the third world we must provide bread. Just for one occasion, let's let's think of our own nations. Come on, all you whites, fight the threat that is red. Come on, all you whites, fight the threat that is red.
Here we go, last hour of the program, radio, RBN, support the network, folks. So we went through Trump's message about sanctuary cities, okay? Can clip 9 cue that one up? Now, I felt something strange. I was sitting there with my dad last night, and my dad's like, he's watching Trump. He's like, that guy's an asshole. I was like, I know he is, Dad. Don't get me twisted. I know Trump is, he's that way. But, at this point in the world's history, our country's history, what we've been through. And I said this way back. I was like, the guy's a New York shark. And, you know, he's hanging out with Roy Cohn, and we know this, Studio 54, and all this crap about Trump that, you know, I went through this ad nauseum. Roy Trump, this gay Jewish guy that really hated Jewish communists. He was hanging out with Senator McCarthy, and so there's some weird, you know, underbelly here with Trump. Trump's always been around a lot of Jews, got a lot of Jews in his organization. But at the same time, I think Trump is one of these virulently anti-communists. And so look, there's problems with capitalism, with laissez-faire capitalism as well. And I know this. Capitalism unfettered breeds, the JP Morgans and the Rockefellers and so forth. I get that. Okay. I don't like seeing our media combined and consolidated into these like six corporations, and I don't like this any more than you do. But free enterprise and entrepreneurship, this sort of thing is where it's at. This is where innovation comes from, and so forth and so on. Now we have to really keep a check on this technological onslaught of trying to lead us down the Matrix Terminator vision, and I get this. But here's an angle which kind of freaked me out last night about Trump, where he's talking about the EU and them not letting, you know, the tariff wars that we're gonna start having now. You know, steel and aluminum are one thing, but let's talk about farm products. Ken, roll clip 9.
Dealing with people that want to obstruct. They want to stop us from doing things. We put an infrastructure bill in for $1.7 billion, and I hear they want to stop it. They want to stop DACA. DACA is their issue. But I'm willing to go along. Get it done. We got to get it done, right? Get it done. And besides that, you know, honestly, we need good, great workers in our country, because I'm bringing a lot of companies into this country. We're not going to have workers for it. We have to bring
them. All right, pause it.
But DACA, they're here.
All right. So we paused it there. Okay. So see, Trump is trying to make the point that, okay, I'm going to bring so many jobs and so many companies back that we're going to need these people. You know, I don't like that. And look, we've got a bunch of people that are unemployable. They're strung out on drugs. They sit around and get stoned all day. And I'm not against marijuana necessarily, but if you sit around and smoke weed, you know, 15 hours a day, you're not employable. We got a bunch of people strung out on psych meds, opioids, and everything else. We got a bunch of unemployable people, and I know this. But at the same time, I don't want to bring a bunch of companies in here, and then all you want to do is bring in a bunch more of immigrants, unless they're the whites from South Africa. I'm cool with that, but they don't want to leave their country. They plotted that land out 400 years ago. Jones had one of the Swedlanders guys on. He's like, I'm not leaving this land. My ancestors conquered it, and they tilled this land. They built it from nothing. They bought this land from people. And then, you know, Huli, he sent me stuff where the Zulu king and all these people are, they're trying to go off on the ANC. So there's a war here in South Africa between visions. Basically, the Zulu king, I think his first name's Goodwill something something, but he thinks it's criminal to try to take the land from these South African farmers. There's Zimbabweans that are begging white farmers to come back to Zimbabwe. And so there's a whole lot going on here, but unfortunately there's a bunch of people caught in the middle, and it's insane. But this terrorist ANC, okay, these thugs, they must be dealt with, okay? And I personally think there's been so many people poisoned against the white people in Zimbabwe and South Africa that it's just going to have to be a fight. And personally, it's just like, what's our military doing? Unfortunately, the Knights of Malta, Robert Mugabe's a Knight of Malta, and the communist Jesuit forces who hate the Protestants. See, these guys are Protestants down there in South Africa. We have to keep that in mind. And then, of course, the Jewish Oppenheimers and all the basically the Zio thugs that have always supported the ANC, Joe Shlomo standing there with his communist fist with Winnie and Nelson Mandela before the big hammer and sickle, all those Jewish communists. They got to be dealt with in South Africa. And I don't think basically that the, you know, Drudge has even posted, folks, about white genocide in South Africa in the last week, Valima's comments. And so things are moving finally. You know, a lot of us have always been covering this white genocide angle in South Africa. And there were all these kind of goofball anti-apartheid buffoons from the 80s. I remember this stuff when I was a kid, apartheid, blah, 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 the demonization. It's just like, look, apartheid was the only thing that kept South Africa basically as a viable nation state. Now it's going through the full-blown collapse. Unfortunately, a large swath of these people immigrated from other parts of Southern Africa into South Africa, and they've always had to deal with this large swath of immigrants, and the only way to deal with it was probably apartheid. And you can love it or hate it, whatever you want, but no, South Africa turned from a first world nation into a third world nation, and it's on its way to where basically now there's forces that want to murder every last white person in the land. And so hindsight's 20/20, et cetera, et cetera. But go ahead and continue, Ken.
They're good people. And the Democrats are trying to not do so. I offered a deal that was so good you can't refuse, right? Like the mob pictures. I give you a deal that's so good you can't refuse. I made a deal. I gave them a deal so good they could not refuse. And I did it because I thought they were going to refuse. And they did. And they're getting killed now by the DACA recipients. They're getting killed. But somebody like Lamb, he's never going to vote for us. He's now saying, and I appreciate his nice words about me. This is Trump country, right? So he has to say nice. Okay? He's smart. So he's saying nice things. Here's the problem. As soon as he gets in, he's not going to vote for us. He's going to vote the party line. He has to. And if he doesn't, he's never going to a chairman of a committee. He's, you know, it's a whole crazy system. But he's going to vote the party line. He doesn't care about us. But for getting your votes, he's talking about how much he likes tariffs, which is my baby. And I took a lot of heat over that. But let me tell you, all these countries now are calling up. We don't want the tariffs. What do we have to do? European Union. They kill us. Sounds good. A lot of us came from the European Union, different countries, right? Sounds nice. They kill us on trade. So we put on tariffs, and the European Union's out there. Well, we're going to put on. I said, you can't go any higher than you are anyway. And they have trade barriers. We can't even sell our farming goods in there. They totally restrict us. So then they say, we want those tariffs taken off. I said, good. Open up the barriers and get rid of your tariffs. And if you don't do that, we're going to tax Mercedes-Benz. We're going to tax BMW.
You want to have money? You want to have money come into our country? And you know, the cars are really the big item. That's the big money item. So when I said that, all of a sudden it's like, whoa, let's stop talking with this guy. You know, with the European Union, we're like $100 billion down. Because we had stupid politicians doing stupid things, right? Think of $100 billion. By the way, we're really, I've always said $71 billion, but Mexico, we're $130 billion. That's a real number because nobody includes the VAT tax. Nobody even knows what a VAT tax is, but Mexico charges a 16% VAT tax. So nobody ever talks about it. You know, they do it. That deal was bad the day they made it because they had a tax and we didn't. So they have a 16% VAT tax. Nobody ever talks about it. But I talk about it. So we're either going to renegotiate NAFTA. And I said, we won't put the tariffs on Mexico and Canada. And Canada's brutal. Canada's really tough. They, you know, we have a big deficit with Canada too. They send in timber. They send in steel. They send in a lot of things. But our farmers in Wisconsin are not treated well when we want to send things to them. Hey, and I don't blame them. Why should I blame them? Because they just outsmarted our politicians for decades. And I don't mean Obama. I mean all of them. Since Bush the first. And that includes, I mean, that includes a lot of territory. Frankly, Ronald Reagan. You remember, I didn't love his, I thought he was great. I loved his style, his attitude. He was a great cheerleader for our, you know, for the country. But not great on the trade. For many, many years, they've been outsmarted. You know, we used to be a nation of tariffs. When other countries would come to the United States, they had to pay for the privilege of taking our product, of taking our jobs. They had to pay. They wanted to come in and sell their product. They had to pay. Today, in China, they sell a car to us. They pay 2.5%. We sell a car in China, which, by the way, is almost impossible to do despite the tax. It's 25%. So why is that 25 and we're 2.5? And that's why we have a trade deficit with China of $500 billion a year. It's no good. But we're changing it. And it takes a little while. I'm there a year, a little while.
All right, go ahead, stop it.
We're changing it.
So, China with cars, I don't know of any cars that China sells to us. Trump goes off on his rants, but here's the point I wanted to make. Trump talks about our farmers and our farm products. Well, guess what? Everything that we try to push on the EU, Canada, everything else is genetically modified. So this is one of the big reasons why other blocs don't want our stuff. Because it's all Monsanto, Cargill, DuPont, garbage. And so, you know, this is one of the points where, you know, Monsanto's world headquarters is right here in St. Louis. So I don't like that aspect. Don't try to push the poison of genetically modified foods onto the rest of the planet as a leveraging tool, with tariffs. I really found that one, let's just say not very palatable. Ken, get clip six ready. Now this is James Alsup and this is about Trump tariffs and China, the race to the bottom and so forth. We can't compete with China as far as cheap products. Okay. Walmart, we've all been dealing with this for hell, a long, long time. But let's roll six.
So first of all, what is a tariff? A tariff is similar to a tax. It's charged, usually as a percentage, on specific classes of imports into a country. For example, if there were to be a 25% tax on shoes being imported from China, and I imported $1,000 worth of shoes, then I, as the importer, would also have to pay $250 to the U.S. government. Let's say there's an American shoe company we'll call USA Shoes, and there's a Chinese company called China Shoes. USA Shoes are made in America by American workers that are paid a fair wage and contribute to the American economy. China shoes are made in China by sweatshop workers, and their wages are reinvested into the Chinese economy. Because China shoes uses sweatshop labor and doesn't pay their employees fairly, they can produce shoes for less than USA shoes. As a result, if they flood the market with China shoes, they can undercut USA shoes to the point where USA shoes will go out of business, taking those thousands of American jobs with them. If the American government puts a 25% tariff on the importation of Chinese shoes, it raises their price to be comparable with those of American shoes, thus financially disincentivizing the purchase of Chinese shoes and creating a situation where more consumers are more likely to buy USA shoes. That same scenario is effectively what's going on right now with Chinese steel, Chinese electronics, and just about every other manufactured good. They're made for cheaper in China than Americans can make them for here in America, and as a result, when they're dumped onto the American market, they sell for less and put American manufacturers out of business, taking American jobs with them. Now, that's the overview on why a tariff is implemented and what it is. Let's look specifically at the history now of American tariff policy. Up until the early 20th century, tariffs made up the greatest source of federal revenue. In fact, an incredible 95% of all federal revenue used to come from import tariffs. The Tariff Act of 1789 was one of the newly formed American Congress's first acts, and tariffs comprised the plurality of federal revenue until the introduction of the income tax in 1914. Tariffs have historically been used by the government in order to generate revenue and protect American business. It wasn't until the 20th century that we decided to begin taxing our own income instead of taxing the importation of foreign products. Let's take a look now at some of the criticisms of tariffs. On Ben Shapiro's show on Friday, he flew off the handle and yelled about how dumb and stupid and not good Trump and dumb and stupid he thought Trump was for proposing these new tariffs. This here's one of the tamer cuts from the Friday show. He was totally off the handle.
Hey, this is all stupid. It doesn't make any sense. It's economically illiterate. Hey, I was writing full pieces in March 2016 about why Trump's trade policy was idiotic. He and Bernie Sanders basically have the same trade policy. Note to everyone, if you have the same policy on anything as Bernie Sanders, you're stupid. Does anyone think that'd be good for the economy? No, because this is stupid. S-T-O-O-P-I-D. Stupid. Price of beer is going to go up too. Every beer can in America is made with aluminum, which means that if you like your beer, you're not going to get to keep your beer. The price on it is going to go up, which is, I think most Americans are not going to be super happy with that.
Oh no, my beer. This is the end of civilization as we know it. Bugman uprising when? You know, for a guy who claims to value facts over feelings, Ben Shapiro isn't exactly the paragon of honesty here. Given the amount of aluminum in your average can, the price of a can of beer would increase approximately half of 1 cent. In other words, your 12-pack is going to cost approximately 6 cents more. I wonder why Shapiro would leave that fact out. We all know he is about the facts, after all. Another criticism of tariffs comes in a line you'll frequently hear from self-described conservatives. They will decry tariffs as social justice for corporations. Losing all your jobs to China. Need a safe space, stupid American. Tariffs are designed to protect American political and economic interests, of course. There's no doubt about that. And of course, tariffs wouldn't be necessary if American goods were cheaper than Chinese goods. So yes, this is government intervention. You can label it and dismiss it as social justice if you wish. But we need to ask ourselves, how much of our economy are we willing to jettison in the name of free trade and globalization and cheap products? The Chinese and others will always be able to manufacture goods for less than we will. Their workers are paid a fraction of what ours are and have a fraction of our quality of life. In a race to the bottom, which is what competition is, those willing to live with the worst conditions will always win. So the question isn't who can manufacture goods cheaper. We know the answer to that. It's the Chinese.
All right. See you guys on the other side. Yeah, I hope you're getting it. See you on... We're back. Incendiary Radio. Ken, let's play a little bit more of this one and then I'll comment. Okay, Ken's getting a little freeze. No big deal. So let's talk about it. Trump and the tariffs. You know, the founding fathers, the guys that designed our government, they were big on tariffs. If you look at the history of, yeah, go ahead.
how do we as a nation protect our economic and national security? Globalized trade has had the effect of bringing down the cost of goods, but that phenomenon has come with a cost. From 2000 to 2010, over 55,000 factories in the United States closed down, and along with them, 6 million manufacturing jobs were lost. That's right, 6 million manufacturing jobs. Some people point to our low unemployment as an explanation for why this really isn't such a big deal. However, keep in mind that we are also experiencing the lowest labor force participation rate since the 1980s. Fewer people now are working now than in the past, and much of that is due to the fact that the jobs they used to hold are simply no longer available, and that's due to, in large part, to globalization. America is headed down the path of becoming a nation of consumers, dependent on the world to manufacture all of our goods for us. This carries with it a significant risk. A lack of domestic industry places a nation at risk of shortages or price gouging at the hands of their trading partners. If America's steel industry goes under, for example, we will be dependent on foreign manufacturers to import our steel. And that poses significant risks for American infrastructure, defense, and manufacturing. We can see this happening right now with oil imports coming from OPEC and Russia and Venezuela and these other trading partners. We are largely dependent on the exports of our trading partners to determine oil prices in the U.S. And if there's a shortage from OPEC or a shortage from Russia or a shortage from Venezuela, then we are left scrambling to fill the gap between the supply available and the demand for it, when ideally the situation would be we encourage domestic production of oil and natural gas, and as a result we would no longer be subject to price gouging or artificial shortages being established by OPEC or Russia. We would be able to manufacture oil and natural gas for ourselves. This would be the ideal situation.
In a recent column, Pat, you know, Granite City, Illinois, which is right across the river, firing up one of the blast furnaces, and everybody's real, you know, happy about that. All these steel workers, man, that have been out of work, and U.S. Steel. You should drive through there if you ever get a chance. It's very eerie. It's almost like something out of a Gotham, Batman, RoboCop, weird dystopic novel, like this massive steel plant complex where you can drive kind of right through it on one of the kind of side highways. But, you know, the founding fathers were big on tariffs. That's what funded most of our government for the long beginning of the country, was charging tariffs on goods coming to the country from elsewhere, and that would fund the fair tariffs and excise taxes. That would fund the cost of government. And then we went off into this Zio Federal Reserve system where now they garnish our wages and all the rest of it. And so, you know, is what it is, but, you know, people are whining about all this. Let's, we got a couple of minutes left here. Christopher Green over at Alternative Media TV. Basically, he's on this Bitcoin kick. It's going to replace the US dollar. It's going to be worth 100 grand by 2020. 31 earthquakes in the Bay Area in the last 24 hours. Okay, San Francisco. China's space lab allegedly, looks like it might crash into somewhere in Michigan. Russia's spy ship spotted off the coast of Georgia. You know, I'm sure you've seen all these various reports, and I'm just kind of going through this. President Xi, of course, Trump mentioned this, Xi Jinping of China, they're having the Politburo, whatever the equivalent of, to vote out him ever having to step down from office. So he's coming Mao Zedong 2.0, as we covered before. And Trump makes a joke about how, hey, that might work for us here in America. Kind of like how Bush made that joke. Dictators are all right as long as I'm the dictator. And then so Trump makes a joke, and everybody's freaking that Trump's going to try to stay in office and blah, blah, blah. And we were all kind of freaking about Obama, this Maoist, Leninist Obama. We were kind of all, I was worried about him trying to stay in office. If you go back into my old broadcast, hell, when you got people like this, it is what it is. All the left was worried about Bush trying to stay in office past his two terms. All the right was worried about Obama staying in office past his two terms. And now, of course, the left again is worried about Trump trying to stay past his, well, possible two terms. Who knows what's going to happen in these midterms? Usually the opposition party gains seats. And so, see you guys on the other side of the break. Last half hour of the program coming up. Get clip 19 ready. I'm sure you guys have seen this one. This was weird. Katy Perry, the nuns, one of the last nuns that was holding out over this convent area that Katy Perry wants, blah, blah, blah. She dies, keels over and dies right there in the courtroom. And so... Now, over here at Pockets of the Future, one of the YouTubers I'll pop in and check on, he's got about three different videos on this. I'm going to play the short one, and it's worth looking into all this. And it ties in with the good old Jesuits in L.A., another power block. You know, you got your Jewish mob, of course, who very, very powerful. But then you've got, you're always going to see these characters running around as well. Let's roll 19.
Okay, good afternoon, brothers and sisters. Again, you can, I'll link this video, this well-done, well-documented video about these nuns who the Los Angeles Archdiocese that was or owed victims of priest sexual abuse $60 million. So this is a very deviant organization, and these Jesuit priests. There was a part that I left out about this documentary. There's two nuns, the one that recently had a heart attack in court, and this other more feisty nun. And both of these nuns were talking about towards the end of the documentary that they had $6 million in cash, in basic assets and donations and things, which the Vatican stole. So the Vatican stole this estate, which was worth $15 million, another $6 million. So they took $21 million from these nuns. And this feisty nun was like, yeah, they stole it, and they're now living in poverty. In the document in which the Vatican stole this property from these nuns, without really their knowledge, they said that they would take care of the nuns financially, and they would wait until all the nuns were deceased before taking control of the property. But they threw the nuns out, changed the locks on the doors. Nuns are not being taken care of. They stole all the nuns' assets and money. And the priests that were living on the premises are moving to Katy Perry's $4 million mansion that she purchased for them. And so this whole thing is just greasy. These are these Jesuit priests that had no claim or right to this property, and they sold it out from under these nuns. One of the nuns said, because in this original document that was the document that the archdiocese used to steal this from them, in the document it said that the archdiocese would claim the right of the property if they had to financially support the nuns. And the judge said, well, in the courtroom, the lawyer for the archdiocese said that the archdiocese was in fact supporting the nuns, had supported them, and the nuns had millions of dollars in donations and things. And there was an outcry in the courtroom because all the nuns knew this was bullshit. And so this is, you think about, well, an organization that is some sort of just a religion that is just a poor excuse for a pedophile ring, right, is, of course, they'll steal money from nuns. I mean, think about this. And the only other thing I would add this guy.
Now, let's talk about it. Okay, so the Jesuits get to move into a mansion. There's a YouTube channel called Stand with the Sisters, and then there's a documentary called Our Story. Okay. Katy Perry runs around with a lot of the women in the entertainment industry, Hillary Clinton, the political sector. Now, this could be some sort of a psyop to demonize the male priesthood. You know, Francis Bergoglio, aka the Pope, they're talking about letting priests marry. There's a lot going on here. But this could be the demonization of the male priesthood here. Now look, I'm not saying that these Jesuit thugs out on the West Coast who run San Francisco and LA along with the Cosa Nostra in Hollywood and et cetera, it's this power sharing agreement. Everywhere you'll see these two factions. But, I'm not saying that these guys are dirtbags. Probably are. Criminals, thieves, who knows what. These guys assassinate people and all the rest of it. But this is a very weird kind of like a psychological warfare thing. You could just feel it. Katy Perry, the Jesuits, nuns, you know, property, millions of dollars. The whole thing stinks. Now, Yoichi Shimazu, he writes for Rents, and he's a big Fukushima researcher. All roads lead to Rome, Jesuit role in the Russia dossier. And he's also written a bunch of interesting articles about the operation down here in Parkland, okay? And so, Florida Valentine's Massacre saves Debbie Wasserman Schultz Dems from Awan probe, and that ties into that whole Muslim Brotherhood Pakistan stuff. Florida school attack exposes pedophile Jewish vigilantes. Commando strike in Parkland is a polygon puzzle, and this gets into the multiple shooters angle. March for Our Lives is the spearhead for a CIA coup. All right. Weird things going here on afoot. Paul Craig Roberts on the 8th of March, a Stalinist purge in America. America's future turns on the answer to this question. Is it because the Trump regime is letting the prostitutes and the Democrats destroy their credibility, or is it because Trump is weak, confused, and doesn't know how to use the powers of his office to slay those who intend to slay him? This year could turn out to be a defining year for the United States. And we saw all this kind of predictive programming that 2018 was going to be this just year of like balls to the wall, kitchen sink thrown at the country, insanity. And we're seeing, look, it's March and it's like every week I can't even cover everything that happens. It is clear that the U.S. military security complex and the Democratic Party, aided by their media vassals, intend to purge Donald Trump from the presidency. One of the open conspirators declared the other day that we have to get rid of Trump now before he wins re-election in a landslide. It is a known fact that a Russiagate is a conspiracy of the military security complex, Obama regime, DNC, and prostitute media to destroy President Trump. And McCain was in on it. He was the water boy for carrying the dossier and giving it to Comey, allegedly. However, the prostitutes never present this fact to the American public. Nevertheless, the majority of Americans do not believe the Democrats and the prostitutes that Trump conspired with Putin to steal the election. And it's a pretty good article. Let me see here. One question before us. Will Mueller and the Democrats succeed in purging Donald Trump as Joseph Stalin succeeded in purging Lenin's Bolsheviks, including Nikolai Bukharin, who Lenin called the golden boy of the revolution? Or will the Democratic Party and the prostitutes discredit themselves such that the country moves far to the right. Now, if you get into some of these researchers like Eric John Phelps and others that are real, like they think that the Vatican and the Jesuits run the whole planet and Jewry is basically subservient to the Vatican and the Jesuits. They say that this move to the far right is synthetic. It's already actuaried out. They've designed it. And so this whole kind of paradigm here says basically the migrant assault, okay, into America, Australia, Canada, Western Europe is basically a white racial militarization, almost like a boot camp, to synthetically turn everybody far right, Fourth Reich-ish, if you want to use that term. And so there's a whole swath of people that are saying that basically this is a completely synthetic orchestrated manipulation to militarize Europeans and to become completely xenophobic and to lash out and to basically strike at the larger population in all of their countries. But then there's another paradigm out here that says no. This is the last basically pulling out all the stops at basically destroying white majorities in all these white majority countries and basically set these white majorities, turn them into white minorities and eventually genocide them from the earth. And so you have these competing visions and I play around and I look at both of them and I'm constantly trying to gauge them. Where I'm at right now is I think that here's where I'm at right now with it. I think that factions of the Jesuits and some of the Roman, Catholic militants are wedded right now to Jewry in a marriage of convenience to basically go after all the whites that are non-Catholic. And they're agreeing on this one. But at the same time, you're seeing these Catholic countries like Italy and Spain, they're under assault from this, immigration onslaught as well. So the paradigm that they're somehow behind this kind of synthetic Nazification of the white race. Do you think that they would let these hardcore Catholic strongholds, be brought to the brink, of collapse? France, Italy, Spain? I don't think so. I think the latter vision is more, I guess, accurate to me, that basically the white genocide crowd, the world Bolsheviks, I think the vision to me is more accurate, that basically the Kosher Nostra and all of their allies and all their proxy armies, whether it's the ANC types, the Latin, you know, liberation theology commies, I think this is the more accurate vision that I'm looking at right now. And so we can all argue about this till the cows come home. But it's a pretty good article by Paul Craig Roberts about the Stalinist purge. I want to get to this. Ken, get clip 10 ready. This is Enter the Stars, and this is about basically Google getting in bed with the Pentagon. Now, I've always known that Google is a part of the alphabet agencies. Anyway, Facebook is as well. But let's roll clip 10.
Enter the Stars. In complete and total control is the goal of Google. And they are now helping the military with artificial intelligence to go through all of the data collected by drones. We're here. Terminator is here. Rise of the machines. And with an entire fleet of thousands and thousands of drones across the globe and artificial intelligence being used to process data in real time with the help of Google, we now have total domination. Why, I tell you guys, the answer is not getting tough, picking up weapons when they come to your door to take your guns. This is an intellectual fight. This is about waking up people to these facts of where all this is headed. What they've done is they've created this boogeyman overseas, and we are building our own cage. According to this article, we are in an AI arms race. It's happening in industry, and the big five internet companies are pursuing this heavily. Many of you will have noted that Eric Schmidt, executive chairman of Alphabet Inc., is calling Google an AI company now, not a data company. It's official. And Google runs YouTube. They own them. And this is all about algorithms.
All right, go ahead and stop it there. And they don't. Now, I got Gordon Duff's article from March 3rd up. The killer AI is here. Welcome to Gulag Google. Now, if you change the G and the L in Google, you have Gulag. And then Duff's talking about this, basically talking about the Eric Schmidt stuff. And this is from March 3rd. I don't know if it can be turned around or not. It's hard to say, but, now we got to get critical of Trump a bit. Let's go to clip four, Ken. I got clip four and five. This is from Grindel 61. Trump and the Real ID. Okay. Now, if you get into where Real ID was being pushed in the '90s and then into the 2000s, there was a lot of Republicans. Sensenbrenner from Wisconsin was one of them, the big pusher of Real ID, and he was a Republican. Let's roll clip four.
First of all, this is what was coming had we ended up with Hillary.
I have decided we really need camps for adults.
And so in the last year of the campaign, I truly felt I was fighting for my life. It's been 16 months after the 2016 election, and I am pretty sure I wouldn't be here had Hillary won. And even if I was still alive, I definitely would not be talking to you on the internet, because all the censorship we have been experiencing was planned for a year ago when Hillary took power. They are only now implementing it because the plan is to get rid of Trump inside of the first 4 years, which is also why I think he has been compromised. He always talks about making deals, and I think he is willing to play ball on evil agendas in the name of keeping himself in office, as well as doing some of the good that he has done.
To craft a modern feudal society, the globalists are implementing a standardized North American Union ID card to track, trace, and control their serfs as they travel throughout the three regions of the NAU.
The national ID card is here, and we are all expected to be in compliance by 2020 per the order of President Donald J. Trump. That is less than 2 years away. Very recently, I have been hearing a lot of talk locally about the Real ID, which I thought had been dead for the last 15 years. Last night, I got into an argument with someone on Facebook over this very issue. This is how it all started with this post that came across my newsfeed. Alert! California started issuing non-real IDs and driver's licenses starting January 2nd, 2018. If you renew online or by mail, they will send you the default card with the AB60 verbiage on the back, making it so you cannot purchase firearms or ammunition. If you are renewing your ID or driver's license, you need to go in person to the DMV, and you will need to bring the required paperwork. DMV has a checklist online as to what you will need to bring. And here's what it says. Renewing your driver's license, make sure you apply in person for the California Real ID driver's license or you can't buy firearms. And so this absolutely infuriated me. I know for a fact that for the last 8 years under Obama, people who refer to themselves as right-wingers would have never submitted themselves to the Real ID National ID card because they would have been suspicious of Obama's intentions. But now we are seeing the Trump sheeple in action. They are showing me that they are willing to take the mark and accept the beast system so long as President Trump is telling them. This is no different than the cult members we saw under Obama. So here's the conversation I had with someone who I believe is much younger than me and very ignorant of the issue. So this person, Pauline, says, why need a passport to travel within our borders? Why are we changing the way we have lived by the law to accommodate people who don't obey our laws? And this person, Davey, who I end up getting into it with, says, because states are issuing driver's license to illegal aliens and the federal wants to know if you are a legal resident of the U.S., you can thank states California, New York, and etc. for this BS. Now that's a lie, because the Real ID came out in 2005, long before states started giving driver's licenses to illegal aliens.
Go ahead and stop it there.
So I said...
And then Ken get clip 5 queued up, but this is part of the dialectic, you see. They knew that they could force normal Americans into the Real ID system by these lawless libtard commies basically flouting the system by giving out who knows what to all these illegals, letting them vote, drive, and everything else. So then this pushes the dialectic in the other direction to say, look, we need some sort of national system because we got all these rogue states that won't behave. You see, this is how they corral us. Let's roll clip 5.
So this is a video I uploaded in February of 2015, over 3 years ago. Real ID, TSA will force airline passengers to show national ID before flying in 2016. And as you could see, it only got 4 thumbs down at the time. Basically, everybody was in agreement with what I said in this video because back then, I was saying President Obama instead of President Trump. And people were saying that I will not get a national ID card because of Obama. But some of those same people are now running in line to get the national ID card because of Trump. Then, a year later, I made this video, January of 2016. It only got 2 thumbs down. Government can't vet illegals and refugees, but can vet you through Real ID National ID card. And this upset people, because people realize the government at the time was saying that we can't vet some of these people, but they can vet you, the American citizen. Same exact response. I will not get the national ID card because of Obama. And in this video, I talked about Agenda 2030, and it says by 2030, provide legal identity for all, including birth registration. So yes, it is true. President Trump is pushing a New World Order globalist agenda, and we must point it out, because if we don't point it out because we worship the man, then we will succumb to these agendas with zero pushback. And a couple other things I want to point out. For 240 years, we never needed a national ID card system in this nation. But now we need one? For 225 years, we never needed a Department of Homeland Security, but now we have one. For 200 years, we never needed an Environmental Protection Agency, a Department of Energy, and a Department of Education. But now we have those things.
You can stop it there. So you know where he's going with this. Look, you got to keep an eye on these Republicans because they have been civil liberties encroaching draconians because they get the right cover. You see, I always talk about the left cover for criminality and terror and all that, but there's a right cover for stealth, kind of biometric, in the criminal justice stuff that you gotta watch them for. Okay? And unfortunately, the left-wing media is so loony and gone that you really gotta scrutinize it very, very hard these days because they've gone off the deep end with, just silliness. A couple other things I wanted to get to, and we're coming up on the end of the show, is Florida and Rhode Island. Gardasil HPV mandates they're attempting these for kids to go into school. And so to get the Gardasil shot, Florida and Rhode Island, keep your eyes on that. Trump, oh gosh, I wish we had enough more time. Disease X. Look at Disease X, this thing that they can't really classify or look, they can't put their finger on it, that's killing a bunch of people. And a lot of these researchers are looking into it, cocktailed with this 5G being implemented by FEMA and others. This national 5G system to ward off the Chinese hackers, blah, 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 blah. And I didn't get to the veterans home shooting, this Albert Wong character out there in Yountville, California. I didn't get to bring that up. I didn't get to bring up the character in Seattle who had an open carry holster on that they snatched his guns. And I know we're at the end of the show, so I'm going to go ahead and stop it there and appreciate everybody for listening. I might be here next week. I might not. We'll see. Incendiary Radio, RBN, support the network. Thank you, Ken. And we'll go ahead and close out the show.